Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Last month, we pre-recorded an interview with Amy Cliffnauer Miller, author of She Looks Just Like You, a memoir of non-biological lesbian motherhood. We will be speaking with Amy about her real, raw, intense journey. But first, we're going to hear news and events with Outbeat member Greg Moralia.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for Sunday, August 7th, 2011. This week, USA Today reported the American Psychological Association unanimously approved a resolution in support of full marriage equality, a move that holds potential to influence the ongoing legal and public policy debate. The policymaking body of the APA voted 157-0 in favor of the resolution Wednesday on the eve of the professional organization's annual conference in Washington, D.C. The group, which has more than 154,000 members, noted the growing body of research and legal discussion about marriage equality since it first passed a resolution on the topic in 2004. They said, "The resolution points to numerous recent studies, including findings that many gay men and lesbians, like their heterosexual counterparts, desire to form stable, long-lasting, and committed intimate relationships, and they are successful in doing so." It adds that the emerging evidence suggests that statewide campaigns to deny same-sex couples legal access to civil marriage are a significant source of stress to the lesbian, gay, bisexual residents who live in those states and may have a negative effect on their psychological well-being. And on a related note, Chief Seattle would be proud. The Native American tribe he led in the late 1700s has made a giant leap toward equality by allowing and recognizing same-sex marriage. According to the Kitsap Sun, the Squamish Tribal Council in Washington State voted Monday to extend marriage rights to same-sex couples on its reservation near Seattle at the request of Heather Purser, a lesbian tribal member. The change grants gay and lesbian couples all of the rights afforded to heterosexual couples on the reservation. Since the rest of Washington does not recognize same-sex marriage, the law's effect is limited to the reservation, and protections erode for same-sex couples who leave Squamish land. The 28-year-old Purser has been trying to get the tribe's law changed for about 4 years. When the measure passed this week, nobody voiced dissent, and it was approved unanimously. And this week, the Matthew Shepard Foundation announced the 10th anniversary of the Bear to Make a Difference Gala that will take place on Saturday, October 15th in Denver, Colorado. This event originated 10 years ago following the vicious murder of Matthew Shepard in Laramie, Wyoming, when mourners sent teddy bears to the site where the hate crime took place. A couple of years later, friends of Matthew's began auctioning off teddy bears created by local celebrities in order to raise money for the foundation created by Matthew's parents, Judy and Dennis Shepard. Today, the event draws more than 400 people from across the country and raises nearly $100,000 to support the foundation's work of replacing hate with understanding, acceptance, and compassion. Specifically, the foundation is focusing on programs that support LGBT youth. This year's 10th anniversary gala will be an extra special event and will honor Jennifer Beals, author of the L Word book, and John Berry, director of the United States Office of Personnel Management. For tickets and information about the event, you can learn more at www.matthewshepard.com. In Houston, Jennifer Poole, a leader in Houston's construction industry and LGBT community, is hoping to become the city's first transgender city council member. Poole is running for a seat that will soon be vacated by lesbian Sue Lavelle, who is termed out. Before Lavelle, Anise Parker, now Houston's lesbian mayor, occupied the seat. Poole worked in the construction industry in the 90s, but was fired when she transitioned. After that, she started a consulting business that assisted companies with construction management and permit issues. And here in California, Transportation Security Administration managers at the Los Angeles International Airport will undergo required sensitivity training as part of a settlement in a lawsuit filed by a transgender former employee. Ashley Yang was fired in July of 2010 from her job as a security checkpoint screener at LAX after she was observed using the women's restroom. Managers had forced Yang, 29 years old, to represent as male at work. As a result, she was routinely harassed by male passengers. Yang sued for sex discrimination under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. The settlement finalized last month includes a five-figure award for pain and suffering, as well as 5 months of back pay. Ashley lives her life as a woman. Her co-workers recognized her as a woman. Passengers recognized her as a woman, but her employer didn't. The Transgender Law Center legal director Christian Works told the AP she was asked to hide who she was just in order to earn a living. If you have news and event you'd like to share with our listeners, please tell us about it by going to our website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat Radio News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Morelia. Now back to Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Greyer.
For being on and joining. And if you just joined us, that was Spirit Lullaby by Honey in the Rock off their I Got Shoes CD. This is Sheridan Gold, and I'm being joined in studio by my co-host and wife, Dr. Diana Greyer, and our engineer, Jeff Basham. And you are listening to Living Proof on Outbeat Radio. And we are going to be talking with Amy Klempnauer Miller, author of the book She Looks Just Like You, a memoir of non-biological lesbian motherhood. This interview was pre-recorded last month, and we have divided it up into two sections. So here is the first section, and we'll be back afterwards. bearing of your life. And our first question to you is, if after you tell us a little bit about your story and your book, just like, you know, in 2-3 sentences, we'd like to know what motivated you to write the book.
Oh, that's a good question. Well, just the 2-3 sentence capsule of the book is, I started it when I was trying to get pregnant myself, and that process went on for a couple of years, and then I continued writing when my partner and I were trying to consider whether we wanted to, you know, go forward with trying for a biological pregnancy or look at another option. Then continued through her pregnancy and through the first year and a half of our daughter's life. I think I wrote it in part because there wasn't anything else like it out there, and in part because, you know, I really felt like I wanted to articulate my experience for myself, and this is an experience which is, you know, sometimes there's not much language around same-sex families and what it means to be a different kind of parent.
Yeah, I remember reading that in your book in the very beginning. You said there wasn't much information out there when you guys were looking and looking and looking.
No, there really wasn't. We went to the bookstore as soon as Jane got pregnant, because that's just kind of what we do. But she had a big stack of books about, you know, what to expect and what not to expect and mm-hmm. how to do yoga and, you know, you name it for the pregnant woman. And there were some books for the expectant father, and there was nothing for, you know, the non-biological lesbian mom.
So now there's one, at least now.
Now there's one.
There you go. Good work out in the world you're doing. Listen, Amy, I'm curious about what you said about your own experience, and I know you write about some of that in the book, but if you can share that with the audience about your own experience and how it motivated you. So what was that experience of you trying to get pregnant?
Well, it was an experience that I think a lot of women share, going through the process of in our case, we were using donor sperm, but going through the process of you know, measuring ovulation and trying to get pregnant, it became increasingly clear that it just wasn't going to happen, and we made the decision not to pursue more advanced fertility measures, in part because, for a variety of health reasons. But I think, it's a roller coaster. It's exciting. It's hopeful. It's filled with doubt and anxiety, but in the end, we were fortunate that, you know, there's two women in our relationship, and so Jane was able to try to get pregnant and succeed.
Yeah, that is interesting, because usually if it's a heterosexual couple, if the woman can't get pregnant, that's it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then the question is, you know, will they adopt or try another measure or be childless? And we considered, a broad range of options before Jane decided that she was ready to try getting pregnant. But it is one of the unique characteristics of the lesbian couple that, as I call it, you know, no waiting womb too.
Very nice. I like that. Well, we have a lot of questions that begin, the questions start at the beginning of your book and kind of go through in a chronological order.
Okay.
So it's a good way to introduce the listener to your book as well. So in the beginning, you talk about grief, and you say, I'm quoting here, of course there have been changes in our lives, but for years, our relationship has been the two of us walking together in the world. Now it will be the three of us. I'm excited about the change, but there's sorrow in it too. Could you explain to us further about what you were feeling?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you go into becoming an expectant parent, of course you're excited, but even whether you've been together a shorter time or a longer time, in our case, we had already been together 18 years, so we had a very established relationship. I think one of the things that happens is a recognition that what has gone before is not what's going to be in the future, and in all honesty, you know, we didn't realize the extent to which that was true. But it is true that bringing children into a relationship changes that relationship in very significant ways, way beyond just the daily life aspects of having a kid. And in our case, you know, I felt like, well, this is a milestone that we're passing, and that means that these 18 years, our first 18 years, are past.
Yeah, I think it's important, Amy, for the audience to hear some of those changes. Could you share a few that you really like stand out for you right now that you notice having a third, you know, having the
sure,
child?
Sure, having a child.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are the obvious changes in terms of just the demands of day-to-day living. I mean, when you have a baby, you have to take care of the baby. When you have a school-age child, there's still a lot of caretaking that goes on. You know, managing sort of the daily life of this of the kid or kids. The other thing that happened in our relationship, and I think this is extremely common, whether you're in a gay or lesbian or a heterosexual relationship, is that when you move from being partners to being parents, gosh, lots of things change. Your relationship changes. The balance of your relationship changes. No longer are you just communicating between two adults, but there is a third or maybe, you know, a fourth and fifth party involved with competing needs and competing interests. You learn a lot about yourself that you might not have expected. I assumed that, you know, Jane and I were very similar in many, many ways. I assumed that, well, that would naturally extend to our parenting styles, which has not really, you know, necessarily been the case. I think we parent more differently than I might have expected. But we wouldn't have known that. You know, you can talk about it in advance, but you don't really know.
Can you give an
until
example?
You're in the situation.
Yeah. Can you give an example, something off the top of your head that surprised you?
Sure. I tend to be more focused on structure. And Jane is more focused on, you know, is more... she's a planner, but she is more of a let's see what shape the day takes kind of girl. So, and that has a big impact when you have a child in the mix.
Mm-hmm. But were you able to maintain that when you had Hannah? Because you just said that what you thought didn't really happen. Do you understand what I'm saying?
You know, when it's two adults, I think one of the things that can happen is that you negotiate issues without really necessarily realizing that you're negotiating them. You know, you can make decisions or you can make plans more spontaneously. And with a kid in the mix, you know, I'm the one who gets up in the morning and wants to have a plan for the day, and Jane really doesn't want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm the one that says, you know, I think we should only watch X amount of TV, and she feels like, you know, maybe we don't have to have, you know, a hard and fast rule around that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really sort of two different ways of looking at how do you structure a family life.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to when Jane was pregnant. And you write in the book that Jane's mother called and wanted to know how Jane was doing. And then she said, when she was referring to you, she said, so how is the mom-to-be's helper? How were you able to negotiate that with your mother-in-law? Or did you?
Yeah. You know, in the moment, I sort of responded by letting it go. But I think the thing that it really brought home to me was that we lack language for families that don't fit the norm. And I suspect the other families that, you know, not just with same-sex parents, but other families that are outside of the archetypal norm also experience this. But I found often, not just with her, but often that people needed some coaching, really, and some guidance on how do they refer to me? What do I call myself? How do they refer to the biological father? And so both with our parents and also with people outside of the family, we've tried to be fairly proactive in just using language in conversation as we explain our family, so that they know, you know, this is a safe way and an appropriate way to, you know, to talk about the family.
Mm-hmm. How does Hannah I mean, I know the answer to this, but the listeners don't. So can mm-hmm. you explain to them how Hannah refers to you and Jane? What does she call you guys?
Hannah refers to me as Mama and to Jane as Mommy or Mom. And we chose those names in part because we wanted to have names that were recognizable to the broader world as Mother. For instance, as opposed to using, some women choose to use a name for the, especially for the non-biological mom, that is like Mimi or Baba or something that might not be as recognizable to other families. But it was a question that came up over and over again. People constantly asked me, you know, what are you going to call yourself? And it was almost as if, you know, having two parents of the same gender presented this level of confusion that, you know, we might not ever be able to work through.
I'm sitting here just shaking my head. It's like, what? She's the mother. Hello. You know?
Well, I bet you it's very clear to Hannah.
Yeah.
While everybody else is struggling.
Clear to Hannah. Yeah, and it really is. It's always clear to the kids. Mm-hmm. Although she noticed when she was about four that people outside of the family would still become confused if she referred to Mommy or to Mama. And so she started referring to us as Jane and Amy whenever she was talking to people outside the family.
She did that on her own?
She did that on her own.
What did you guys think about that?
I thought it was pretty clever on her part.
Huh.
But, you know, it was very perceptive. You know, in a perfect world, it would be a non-issue. I mean, people would be more familiar with a broad range of families and you know, understand more readily.
Mm-hmm.
What shape the families take and what language we use.
I want to go back to when Jane was pregnant and you were doing a lot of questioning. You talked about having maternal feelings towards your cats. And I believe you have three, yes?
Sadly, yes, I did.
And you felt very maternal towards your cats, and you were wondering if you'd be able to feel maternal towards your daughter. I think a lot of lesbians they have these incredible relationships with animals. And I think there's fear when it comes to babies. So I'm curious how you made a conclusion upon your maternalness for Hannah.
That was a big anxiety for me, was, you know, the question of, will I be able to be a mom? What will it mean for me to be a mom, especially when I'm not the person carrying the baby? And so much, you know, in the broader world, so much of how we understand maternity is tied to pregnancy and birth. So that question just came up over and over and over again. And, yes, I did feel maternal toward the cats. once Hannah got here, I sort of started ignoring the cats. I think in some ways, I felt like perhaps dads feel, in the sense that they're a little bit outside the pregnancy, you know, that much of the attention is on the woman and her pregnancy, and the dad is kind of a little bit more ancillary. And I know that there have been, you know, dads who have felt like, gosh, will I bond with the baby? What will that mean to bond with the baby? Once Hannah was born, I had what I can only describe as, you know, a flood of maternal feeling, and feeling very protective and very much in love with her. And that took about, I don't know, a couple of minutes. But
yeah, Jane had a very, sounds like she had a very intense birth.
She did, and not expected at all. You know, we had it all planned out in our minds about how it was going to go, and it's not how it worked out. But she went into labor, and that was all looking fine. And we went to the hospital, and they, you know, were measuring the contractions and the heartbeat and whatever. And Hannah's heartbeat dropped significantly. And so they rushed Jane into the operating room, and then the heartbeat stabilized. And we thought, you know, the doctor felt like, well, let's just see how things are going. And then it happened again. I guess, about 2 hours later, and her heartbeat went way down. And so they ended up doing an emergency C-section, and that was. It was quite traumatic. It was very scary, you know, mm-hmm. when you're listening to the monitor flowing and slowing and slowing, and you know that's your baby's heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to return to your comment about fathers, and you've talked a lot in your book about your own identity and identifying with men and fatherhood and dads. Could you say a little bit more about that? Because even, you know, like in the last third of the book, you said, even after 6 months into it, I felt like a dad in drag. Could you talk a little bit more about identifying with men in this way?
Sure. Well, you know, one of the groups of people that I felt most linked to were stay-at-home dads. In part because, you know, there are folks who are actively parenting, but they're also challenging a lot of gender assumptions and stereotypes. So both when Jane was pregnant and then really continuing to this day, I really feel like stay-at-home dads are sort of my people. I think in terms of the identity, you know, I don't think of myself as a dad, but I do feel in some respects like my, not that I'm filling that role, but that my role is comparable in some ways. And again, that's not just because, you know, I didn't give birth. But, and actually I think, you know, probably more than anything, that my role is somewhere in between mother and father.
It sounds like it's a very confusing place to be when there's, like you say, there's no language for it.
Yeah. It is. I mean, the language is actually a big deal. And it sounds, you know, like a small thing, but and people make accommodations. They come up with language. But I think, you know, when we have language for something, it becomes more real. And mm-hmm. I found myself constantly being the non-something. I was the non-biological mother. Or I was the non-birth mother. You know, I've heard some people use co-parent, which is fine, but I didn't want to be a co-parent. I wanted to be a parent. So it's funny the power that language has, and the absence of it can sort of really have an impact in terms of how you understand yourself.
Mm-hmm. And just hearing you talk about it, Amy, I can feel how the non-biological label can distance you, or it seems like there's some separation when you talk about you feel between mom and between the dad perspective. I mean, I'm just feeling like that label has caused some, I don't know, this is just what I'm picking up. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit more about that, but that's really interesting what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, I think the non-ness of it all is not helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I'm not sure what I am, but I'm not these other three things. You know, I'm Hannah's parent. I'm Hannah's mama, and that's a word that I feel fits me. But yeah, I do feel as though I'm in this zone that really isn't particularly well defined. And I think it's cool actually that there are a growing number of people, same-sex parents, gay and lesbian, who are defining this in-between space between motherhood and fatherhood, because I think there's a lot of ways to be a parent, but we still have such dominant archetypes around mother and father.
U.S. government and the president. support for Living Proof on KRCB-FM comes from members and from the Healdsburg Guitar Festival, August 12th through the 14th, at the Hyatt Vineyard Creek Hotel in Santa Rosa. The festival features the exhibit and sale of custom-built guitars, workshops on guitar playing, composing, and performance, and ongoing concerts on two stages all 3 days. Tickets and information at festivalofguitars.com or by phone 1-800-477-4437. You're listening to KRCB-FM, Santa Rosa.
That's how we define the family. Well, 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 I had sworn to tell the truth, and I don't like to lie. I said, sir, you're missing.
Was Redefine the Family, sung by Michael Callan off his Legacy CD. And he wrote that in 1996. And it was a pretty great song, and it's perfect for our show tonight, talking with Amy Klempnauer Miller about her family. And she just talked about defining her family and actually wanting to offer some guidance to people on how to talk about her family. And she talked about broad ranges of families. And there's a verse in this song. Well, let's see. I've been sworn to tell the truth, and I don't like to lie. You are misinformed. Please allow me to clarify. And I think that's what Amy and Jane have to do a lot. They have to clarify a lot. And it must get tiring. We will be talking with Jane in our second half of the interview in a moment. But Diana wanted to say a couple words about this issue.
I just love when he talked about, when he said, we define our family, we offer no apology. We celebrate our diversity, you see. We define our family. So I just want to just say power to all of you who are standing up for your family, whatever the shape it forms, whatever that is to you. You know, it takes strength and commitment and perseverance, and that is what Amy shows. And I appreciate her so much telling her story.
Yeah, and speaking of Amy, let's get back to the second part of our interview. Welcome back, Amy. And let's see, before break, we were talking about comments from the public. Like, you take Hannah out and people are assuming that you are her biological mother, and they'll say things like, is this your first? Or, I bet Daddy's proud. And we were wondering how you handled questions like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that happens is that people see what they expect to see. And so even as much as families have changed in America, people still, by and large, expect to see the birth mother carrying the baby, or, you know, if there's two women and one is carrying the baby, that it must be the birth mom and a friend. And so if they're making comments that are friendly and innocuous, but what they don't realize is that they're very loaded. My philosophy has been, you know, without sort of getting on a soapbox every time I'm in the grocery store, my philosophy has been to just be as honest as possible. And so even though sometimes I was in this sort of weird situation of a complete stranger saying something to me, and I didn't really feel like going into a long exposition about my family life, I've generally tried to treat our family in as open and honest a way as we can, and just talk about, you know, with my partner's the birth mom, and this is my daughter Hannah, and on we go.
How is that received in your neighborhood, St. Paul, Minnesota, where you live? I mean, is that how is the reception around that same sex mother's relationship?
Well, there's such a thing as Minnesota nice. you know, in where we live, we have been very fortunate. Our family has been received very well overall. I think in some other parts of Minnesota, or certainly other parts of the country, that wouldn't necessarily be the case. But there's a good community here of families headed by same-sex couples. There are questions, you know, that come up, and I generally am open to questions when they're sincere, or if people are, you know, just curious. I don't expect them to know about same-sex couples if they haven't really spent time with any before.
Mm-hmm. I think it'd be a great time to talk about your adoption process, because you described it so in detail in the book. So I think it'd be good for the audience to hear. If you could take us through some of it, that'd be great.
Sure. So well, I needed to adopt Hannah, and I did that when she was 2 months old. The reason I needed to adopt her is because as a non-biological same-sex parent, I had no legal standing whatsoever. You know, when we went to the hospital, I had a form that gave me power to make decisions for Jane if she was incapacitated. But once we came home, you know, I could have been a neighbor who just dropped by and refused to leave. So in Minnesota, we use something called second parent adoption, which is the model that's generally used around the country, and it's based on a step parent adoption model. In order to adopt Hannah, I needed to jump through a fair number of hoops. You know, I needed to get affidavits from our parents. We had to file a petition so that we wouldn't have to have a home study done. We had to file a petition so that the court wouldn't require Jane to terminate her own birth parent rights. In some cases, that is required, and then both mothers have to adopt the child. We also had to search the Minnesota Fathers Registry, even though, you know, we knew that we were using an anonymous donor, but that's what the court requires. Fortunately, I was able to adopt her. And again, in Minnesota, we have no statewide law that says, you know, same-sex partners can adopt. So it's all case by case and judge by judge. Fortunately, we got a judge who was friendly. We lived in a county that was generally friendly.
What if they would have said, no, you can't adopt her?
Yeah, if I couldn't have adopted Hannah legally, then it has huge implications. And this is a real problem for same-sex partners who live in counties or states where adoptions are not being approved. For instance, if I hadn't been able to adopt her, I wouldn't be able to provide health insurance to her. I could be denied custody or visitation rights if Jane and I were to break up. I wouldn't be able to pass on Social Security benefits. I wouldn't have the legal rights to make medical decisions for Hannah. If Jane were to die, I wouldn't automatically become Hannah's legal guardian. If we were to break up, I wouldn't be required to pay child support. And, you know, this is just a tiny example, but I think it illustrates how pervasive the legal connections are. I took Hannah to get her ears pierced before her birthday, and before her eighth birthday, and in order to do that, I had to prove that I was her legal parent. And I was like, my gosh, you know, I wouldn't even be able to do that if I hadn't been able to adopt her legally.
And so if Jane were to take Hannah to get her ears pierced, what would have happened?
would be no problem. I mean, she would have had to have proven her legal parentage, but she would have been able to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, and what we ended up doing was just showing a birth certificate. And because I was able to adopt Hannah, my name is on that birth certificate mm-hmm. now.
So any, I don't know, I'm a little confused. If I were listening to you right now, I'd be saying, so anytime they want to do something like pierce Hannah's ears, they have to prove legal parenthood? I mean, do straight couples have to do that?
Well, it depends where you go. But, there are many, many times and places where legal parenthood has bearing. And, you know, you can, if you have a sick child, you can take the child to the hospital, and no one might ask you, you know, you have to prove your legal parenthood. They might just assume it. But if they do ask you, and you're not legally the parent, then you don't have the legal right to make medical decisions. So it really, what ends up becoming an issue for people is in things like inheritance and estate and custody is a huge issue. Or if you're in a situation like a school or a doctor, a hospital, and one person raises the question about legal parenthood, if you are not the legal parent, then you're vulnerable and your child is vulnerable. And that's totally unnecessary.
Yeah. I don't know what would prompt people to ask that question.
It happens. You know, if they see two women come in, you know, it wouldn't be difficult at all for a nurse or a doctor to say, well, who are you and why are you here? And, you know, are you related? Are you, you know, you can't just sort of, if you're not related or tied legally in some way, then, you know, you can't make decisions.
Yeah. Well, glad that you were able to adopt Hannah. I remember in the book you and your lawyer already knew that you were going to have a particular judge, and then at the last minute, the judge got changed.
Yeah, we were a little anxious about that.
But all was well.
It turned out just fine, and we were very fortunate, you know, because it could have gone the other way.
Mm-hmm. There's one more thing I wanted to talk to you about, Amy, before we leave our conversation, and that is you talk a lot about guilt in your book. You talk about your decisions with Jane, that Jane would return to go to work and you would stay home. And so Jane felt guilty to leave Hannah, and you felt guilty for staying home and not adding to the money, the finances. And it just sounds like everybody was just full of guilt in those early days. And could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was kind of the days of guilt and anxiety. I think feeling guilty is very common especially among new mothers. But yes, Jane felt as though, you know, she wasn't being a good mother when she went back to work. And I felt like I was putting needless pressure on Jane by not going back to work myself, even though we knew from the get-go that we wanted one of us to stay at home with Hannah after her birth. But, you know, you're tired, you're anxious, you are overwhelmed often, and that all adds to the sort of pressure on the parents' relationship. In our case, it manifested often as feeling guilty or feeling anxious whenever anything went wrong or something that we, you know, didn't understand. If Hannah was sick, there would be a lot of anxiety.
How did the guilt thing resolve itself? Or has it resolved itself?
Or has it resolved itself? I think we found more of an equilibrium. And it was only when I was I was several months into parenthood that I ran into somebody who told me that she had heard that it always takes about 18 months to incorporate the addition of a new person in your family, you know, a new child or some other person in your family. And I really feel like we were out of equilibrium for quite a while. And trying to make the shift from being essentially equal partners who had very similar lives to parents who had markedly dissimilar lives in terms of our daily activities. I think over time, though, you know, we've come to more of a balance where, you know, among the three of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good thing that all families look for is balance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So, Amy, we're nearing the end of our show, and it's clear you are a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of experience that you've shared in your book. So what we like to do, Sharon and I, with our guests, is to have you share some of that wealth of knowledge with our audience by sharing some advice, because I know that there are other probably lesbians who want to have their own babies, or whatever advice you want to offer based on your experience that you've been sharing. That would be greatly appreciated. So what would you offer to those?
What advice would I give? Yeah. Sleep now. you know, I think probably one of the pieces of advice that I might give would be to understand, and to the extent possible, to be open to the fact that when you become a parent, your understanding of yourself will change and your understanding of your partner will change. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Sounds sound to me. So this last part is, how would people want, if they want to get your book, is there an email if maybe somebody wants to contact you and talk to you about it a little
sure.
deeper?
Sure. Well, my website is amiekmiller.com. It's AmiekMiller.com. And my book is available readily on Amazon or at local bookstores. My email is amie0422@comcast.net. And I'm always happy to hear from readers of the book.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being our guest tonight. Really, really appreciate it. We've liked getting to know you and talk to you, Amy.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Take our time. We take our time. sings. I listen to and I dance along. We keep on dancing when the music's gone.
Was Manhattan Moon by Lucy Kaplansky on her Over the Hills CD. We were talking to Amy Klempnauer Miller, author of She Looks Just Like You, a memoir of non-biological lesbian motherhood. And if you would like to listen to this interview again or tell your friends about it, it will be up on our website within the next week, and you can go to that website at outbeatradio.com. In fact, all of our shows, all of our Living Proof shows for the year are up there, and in fact, all of our Outbeat Radio shows, all four shows, weekly shows, are up as well. So if you're interested, check us out. If you'd like to contact Diana or myself personally, you can go on the left-hand side. There's a list of hosts. There we will be, and you can click on that and send us an email. Let's see if there's anything else. Oh, we wanted to repeat Amy's information in case you missed it in the interview. Her website is Amy K. Miller, and she spells Amy A-M-I-E. So that's A-M-I-E-K. miller.com. And I have been on her website, and it's all about the book. It's a beautiful book, and it's how you can get it and all the information there. If you want to email her, she said she would be very happy to hear from you if you have any comments about the book or if you have any questions about same-sex adoption, anything like that. She's very open to your emails. And you can reach her at amy0422@comcast.net. That's amie0422@comcast.net. And we want to thank her, Amy Klempnauer Miller, so much for speaking with us and sharing her dream and the manifestation of being Hannah's mama.
Thank you so much, Amy.
Remember, everybody, like Amy, you too can be living proof that with belief in yourself, fierceness, and courage, you can achieve your dreams and goals.
Wow. Thank you. And the show is about to end. So next week, Sunday at 8 p.m., there's Michaela Kinnan with her Outbeat Music Show. And next month, for us, Living Proof, join us for Summer's Over and School's Starting. Our special guest will be Outbeat Radio member Greg Moralia, and he's the dean of Napa College Police Academy. Can you believe that? That's wonderful. I can't wait to hear his story and all. He has lots of stories. Until then, everyone, be well. And be fierce.
Good night.
Your children are not your children. They are the sons and the daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but they are not from you. And though they are with you, they belong not to you.
can give them your love, but not your thoughts. They have their own thoughts. They have their own thoughts. You can house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in a place of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You can try to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you. Try to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and the daughters of life, longing for itself. They come through you, but they are not from you. And though they are with you, they belong not to you. You can give them your love, but not your thoughts. They have their own thoughts. They have their own thoughts. You can house their bodies, but not their souls. For their souls dwell in a place of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You can try to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you. Strive to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you.
Into the window of my mind, reflections of the fears I know I've left behind. I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop.
Solar Living Institute's 15th Annual Moon Dance is Saturday, August 13th, 2 p.m. to midnight in Hofflin at the Solar Living Center, featuring three dancing bands, organic beer, wine, food, fire dancers, and demonstrations. Info and tickets online at solarliving.org. This nonprofit fundraiser supports environmental education for schools, kids, and adults. You are listening to KRCB FM Santa Rosa, community powered radio at 91.1 and 90.9 FM, streaming on the web at krcb.org and on Comcast Digital Cable, channel 961. It is just before 9 p.m. New Dimensions is next. Stay with us.